And the next case for the day is Vohora v. Attorney General Holder. Mr. Sanders.
If you may, imagine I'm in Chicago and a member of a certain gang, and I'm walking down the street after hearing that there was going to be a rumble against us, my gang, by another gang. And as I walk around the corner, I see a member of my gang being stabbed by three people from this other gang. And as I'm sort of stopped in my shoes, they turn around and say, "There's another one. He's just seen us kill this guy. Let's get him." So they chase me for 10, 15 minutes, and I run like all get out, finally jump into a cab, and get away. I know they're looking for me, so I go to another far-out suburb, or a little bit out of state, and as I call back home to my grandparents, I find that these people are casually coming around the neighborhood talking to my grandparents, inquiring about my good health. Now, that's Vohora in a present-day setting. This young gentleman, who was 15 at the time, observed this during the course of a riot. And he was then attacked and ran for 10, 15 minutes before jumping in a rickshaw to get away. Now, persecution is the threat to life or freedom against those who differ. And these people saw that he was of the different group, which were Muslims, that were being attacked by their group, the Hindus. And while we don't have a written statement from them, I think it's reasonable to infer that they not only wanted to do him in because of what he witnessed, but also another chance to get a Muslim. They didn't pursue him, I think, just for one reason. I think they found it handy to have both reasons to go after him. If he had been a Hindu, maybe they would have said, "Oh, you're going to help us, aren't you? Go on to do more rioting," and therefore he might not have been persecuted. And
apparently he was quite safe when he went to Mumbai, though. And was his life in danger all over India, or couldn't he have gone elsewhere in India and survived?
Okay, that's a good question. The cases say if there's a reliable proof of past persecution and it's on credible testimony and there's something physical to support it, then demanding that there be proof that there's no place in India that you can go to is not called for. That's too high a standard. Now, my contention is that the running after him with a knife is physical action. They just didn't wave at him and say, "We're going to get you someday." They ran after him for 10 minutes, and he testified that he could still hear them shouting after him when he got into a conveyance to get out of the way. Which brings up some other points. I think the judge put too high a standard in that respect on Kubeb, that he had to prove that there was no countrywide. There was things in the country reports that shows that it was a mixed bag. There were things happening. There were some areas that were more safe than other. It's an ongoing situation there, from what I've read.
There are more than 130 million Muslims living in India, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So are they all entitled to asylum in the United States?
If they have witnessed a murder and have been threatened and followed up with that threat by people who are in high authority in the Hindu political force, in that group, I would say yes. Also, this is a chance to have a young boy combined with his parents. The judge had an opportunity to put off the case for a little while and say, well, let's see, what's going on? Why isn't he connected with his parents? And there was an L1 application pending for the father.
That had been denied, and there was an appeal. It had been denied, right?
It had been denied. It was on appeal at that time. And the judge says, well, these are different circumstances, and he didn't want to go along. And also, the government said, oh, we will not agree to put the case on hold indefinitely and have it suspended during that period. And Kubev was not given time to bring evidence into court that he should be allowed to join with his parents. It turned out the L1A was not allowed, but in the meantime, his parents did file asylum and still have an asylum case going now. And I think the government abused the standard of saying, he doesn't have proof of anything, and we should, without specifying any reason, say, no, we're not going to agree to have this case put on hold. I think they should be held to the same standard that this court holds to the judges, which say, if you're not going to give people more time, you should spell out why you're not giving them more time. And this court has reversed
cases in that case. Mr. Sanders, the government has argued we don't have jurisdiction to consider that, the government's refusal to agree to administrative closure. Do you have any thoughts on that? Citing the Ninth and, I believe, Eighth Circuits.
I don't recall the specific sources, but the problem that this raises is it turns the preponderance of the evidence into a reverse criminal situation, in that if you don't prove something, you're considered guilty until proven innocent. You have to meet this burden of countrywide and things of this sort. So I'll save the rest of my time for the rebuttal if there are no more questions.
Thank you, Mr. Sanders. The Attorney General.
May it please the Court, John Holt for the Attorney General. Judge Kahady, your question goes to the linchpin of this particular case. There were geographic limits on the threat of misconduct and Hindu influence, and therefore a petitioner could reasonably relocate, and he was beyond the control of the Hindu extremists that initially threatened him. The standard of review...
I understood his comment was that that rule didn't apply if this was past persecution.
Both the board and the court found there was no past persecution.
That's true, but let's assume there was. Then all bets are off, and he's not required to go elsewhere in India.
If he establishes past persecution, and then he would be entitled to relief, but he hasn't done so here. And as a matter of fact, the petitioner admitted himself that he had not suffered any harm. On page 133 of the record, he said he had suffered no harm. He had never been arrested. The board, specifically addressing past persecution, identified three cases of this court and contrasted the facts in this particular case with the facts in other cases where the court had found past persecution.
Would you agree, though, that if a petitioner can show past persecution, he's relieved of any obligation to show countrywide danger?
if he's established his past persecution, that's correct.
Thank you.
But he has not done so here. And so that's why the senior judge's question at the outset really is the litmus paper test. Secondly, the second point we would make is that there is not there was not error in failing to administratively close the proceedings. Administrative closure is a procedure by grace. There's no right to it under the INA, nor by regulation. And the board precedent clearly establishes that administrative closure should only be granted where no party objects to administrative closure.
If it's totally grace, it's not governed by regulations, or then why doesn't the Supreme Court's earlier decision this year that you talked about in your footnote, Kuchana, apply to say that, well, maybe it is subject to judicial review?
Well, the footnote 18 in Kuchana said we don't need to go there, and so it's on this court's plate to look at that particular issue in this particular case. We'd submit that, as your question goes to Judge Hamilton, that both the Ninth and the Eighth Circuits correctly analyzed this issue. Under Heckler, there are no standards for this court to apply in judicial review of the administrative closure decision, so therefore there is no jurisdiction. But I think one other point with respect to there is, first of all, there is no jurisdiction. The court need not go there. But if the court decides to go there on the merits, we would invite you to look at page 108 of the transcript. There, the counsel for petitioner at the administrative proceedings, after the judge said, I'm not going to administratively close the proceedings, counsel gratuitously said, I would have objected had you done so. So there was a dialogue on the record about administrative closure, a dialogue addressing from page 106 to 108 whether or not the proceedings should be stayed while the proceedings of the parents or there's action on the parents' matter. And petitioner's counsel's gratuitous comment, we say, belies his particular petition here. With regard to the other procedural issue the petitioner raises, he asserts that the immigration judge erred in failing to instruct petitioner as to his possible relief to adjust status. The requirement for the immigration judge to address adjustment of status or instruct the petitioner with regard to that is rooted in a regulation that says that the judge has this duty where it's apparent on the record that he is eligible for the relief. And the real important point here is that petitioner never introduced any evidence to establish his eligibility to adjust status under INA 245A. What he had to do is he had to establish that he had a valid immigrant visa, not a non-immigrant visa. He and his father first came to this country under a B-1 non-immigrant visa. They were not on the lawful permanent resident path, if you please. So there's absolutely no question that he could not avail himself of 245. Secondly, the L visa that he was applying for had been denied, and petitioner couldn't establish that he had an approved visa, and the immigration judge focused on that point. So for two reasons, there was no error by the judge in instructing petitioner with regard to his right to possible relief, because that relief wasn't apparent. If I may, I'd like to go back to talk about the issue of relief and focus again on the well-founded fear. The regulation on well-founded fear says that there will be no well-founded fear where the persecution is not a fear countrywide, and secondly, the petitioner could reasonably relocate. That regulation is rooted in common sense and logic. And it says very basically that the petitioner that does fear persecution should attempt to avoid persecution to go to another place. Let's look at what petitioner did commonsensically in this particular regard. The facts show, and this is the rest of the story to the hypo, the facts show that immediately he escaped the Hindu extremist. He went to a safe haven. He there went to visit his removed himself to visit with his grandparents, where he stayed 2 weeks. He left his grandparents' home. He went to Mumbai, India, where he lived for 6 months with an aunt and an uncle. And then he went to South Africa. But what did he do after he went to South Africa? Did he flee to the United States? No. He went back to Mumbai and lived again with his aunt and his uncle and stayed with his father, who then had a visa to come to the United States. So it was the actions of the accused that are very commonsensical to try to avoid the persecution that we say speak volumes in this regard and show no well-founded fear.
I believe the judge found there wasn't any pattern or practice, is that right, of persecution in India? Is that, Have I got that right?
That is correct. The judge and the board...
I mean, is this in any way analogous to the situation in Indonesia with respect to the Chinese Christians, and where there's been an awful lot of litigation about that?
Well, there has been a lot of litigation in that point, and there's sectarian strife all over the world, but that's why the regulation reaffirms that there's this duty to reasonably avoid the persecution if possible and stay in country. And so, as Judge Hamilton pointed out, the immigration judge stated on the record that 13.4% of the population of India is indeed Muslim. Millions of Muslims live peacefully, and that's reaffirmed on a very personal point for petitioner in that his aunt and his uncle, his grandfather and his grandmother still live in India safe and free from persecution. The final point that I've mentioned very briefly is the question of whether or not the threats in this particular case would be sufficient for this court to find past persecution or a well-founded fear. The position is very simply that let's look at both the words and the actions regarding the threats. We would ask you to look at page 140 of the record, which says, these are the words of the petitioner. Catch him. He's going to inform others. And the petitioner also stated that when he witnessed this, that the Hindu extremist immediately said, who are you? They questioned him. And it was his failure to respond that he said triggered their pursuit of him. So the words speak volumes, but then in terms of the actions, they pursued him, but he was able to be safely removed from them. He was able to avoid any further persecution, no other words of threats in any other months that he spent in India. So we would say that the combination of no past persecution, no well-founded fear, and then the mere threats in this particular case do not establish the basis for relief. In summary, we submit that there was no basis of relief, there was no well-founded fear, and we ask the court deny the petition for review.
Thank you, Mr. Holt. Rebuttal, Mr. Sanders.
Well-founded fear is not in the eye of the beholder. It's in the mind of the person fearing persecution. The event that occurred was sufficiently physical and threatening enough to reasonably imply that there was a fear of persecution and that this was traumatic enough in a young boy, impressionable and having seen a lot of other writing going on, to continue this fear, regardless of whether the judge and the government found that there was safe haven all over the country. And his continuing fear was supported by the fact that they felt that he had to be kept out of the country for a number of months in order to feel that he would be safe and to give him some chance to try to settle down. And he went back to his country and still felt that he could not live there and without continuing fear. And so I would submit that this severe event was justification for persecution and finding that his actions in the future are still going to be overshadowed, and he should be given some relief, maybe sent back for joinder with his parents, because his father had things that could have been said to show that they were continually to look for him. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sanders. The case will be taken under advisement.